I loved a girl in Saginaw, Michigan. It's time for the Savticast, and I'm your host, Scott C. Hey, how are you doing, folks? Real quick, I want to get to today's interview because it's a great one. But first, before we get there, I want to tell you something real quick about SAFTA and an upcoming workshop. Next week, February 7th, 2015, that is a Saturday if I am not mistaken, there's another SAFTA workshop at the Sundress Academy for the Arts located just outside of Knoxville, Tennessee, and that is Monsterworks, Hybrid Genres and Revision. It is going to be a great one, hosted by two awesome poets, Sarah Wynn and M. Mack. It's going to be a great one. And it's all about revision. It's all about how do you re-sculpt things? How do you get out of your head and get back to the editing process? Because sometimes you're writing something, maybe, and you get so worked up in it. You've looked at it for so long. You're looking at the same thing over and over. And you just don't know what the hell to do with it. Sometimes you just need to throw a takeout menu at it or something. I'm not kidding. As always, for information and complete details about this, as well as price and tickets and all that, you can go to sundresspublications.com/SAFTA, S-A-F-T-A, for all that information and more. I encourage you to check this one out, folks. And I bring this one up specifically for a reason, because next week on the program, a little programming note for you about us. Yes, next week we're going to have our usual promo for our next guest, but that's actually going to come out later next week, probably on Friday or Saturday, because next Wednesday we are going to actually have a mini episode with those two very poets. Wynn and Mack are going to join me on the program. We're going to actually deviate also from our usual standard here on the program of talking about random esoteric stuff and just talking about things. We're actually going to focus a little bit more on the workshop. And maybe you've never gone to these workshops. You've asked yourself, Scott, say, you talk about these quite a bit on the program whenever they come up, but I've never been to one. I don't know what these things are. Well, they're going to lay it down for you, how they got the gig, how it came about, why they settled on that topic, and then give you a preview of what goes on during it and their mindset of it, as well as have some thoughts about the writing process, about revision process, all that, as well as discussion, I believe we have, about competition versus collaboration among different writers. So check that out. That is going to happen next Wednesday here on the program at the regularly scheduled time and day, next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern. And then, as I said, the promo for our next guest will happen later in the week. I don't want to hit you all at once. See what I'm saying? Now, speaking of dual guests, we've got a dual guest here on the program today. Janine and Rick Rastel together. Husband and wife duo, both writers, both really cool, chill people here to talk about Upper Peninsula, Michigan, what's it like in the Upe, as well as tell us some great things. We have a conversation all about, we actually do delve into writing on this one, I'm sorry. We delve into what it's like to be an outsider poet, that you don't come up through the traditional academic model. And much more, though, we get off the topic of writing as is want on this show to do, including, hey, if you listen in here to this episode, you'll find out what song I want played at my funeral. I'll give you a hint, though. It's not the SAFTAcast theme, which you're about to hear.
Hi, Scott.
Hey, how you doing?
We're doing good. How are you?
I'm pretty good.
We have started happy hour early at Gordon in honor of your call.
Excellent. Do I dare ask what the happy hour entails?
I am drinking New Belgian and Escanaba black beer.
Double fisting. I like it.
I know. I'm doing a little bit of the new Fat Tire UP upper hand brew.
Impressive.
And I just stay with red wine.
Just staying with the red wine. I like it. He keeps it simple.
He's very environmentally conscious. He drinks the red wine out of the recyclable box, which makes it very nice.
Hey,
top quality wine.
Chateau de Bois, there's nothing wrong with it.
That's right.
You know, $5 does the job. I can't say that I'm drinking anything interesting. I've got just a big mug of coffee, as I always do.
Well, Scott, I'm sure that where you are, the sun is shining, the birds are singing, and there's joy, unlike Mudville and the UP.
I wouldn't say there's joy in Florida. Wouldn't go that far. So how cold is it right now where you are?
Well, it's not that bad at all. It's 18 degrees.
Considering where you are, that's not bad at all, no.
No, we've had a very mild winter. In fact, we don't even have a foot of snow on our property yet. Other parts of the UP does, but we don't.
Well, that's good to hear. So let me get into it. First question I always ask has to be our burning question that is on everybody's mind right now. You ready for it?
Yes.
I don't think it's on my mind.
Trust me, it's on everybody's mind right now. What is the stupidest thing you can do that's not hurting someone while holding a hammer?
Stupidest thing I can do while holding a hammer?
Put the tines in my mouth.
Good answer.
I would have to say the stupidest thing I did while holding a hammer was forget where the nail was.
That's probably a good answer, too. Taking the hammer and just, you know, hammering the wall for fun.
You know. How about you?
I don't know. Probably the stupidest thing was forget that I was holding the hammer. You know, like you're in, like, Wamet or somewhere, and it's 2 a.m., and you, for some reason, have a hammer in your hands, and you suddenly don't realize that you have a hammer in your hand, and you're like, wait, I came in here for toiletries, you know?
And someone came up to you and said, is that a hammer in your hand, or are you just happy to see me?
Exactly. I don't know. I find there's something fun in going into stores and finding people who have, you know, finding the things that are misplaced. Because you wonder about the stories then. Why is this? I'm not kidding when I say this. I saw a ball peen hammer sitting among, like, fairy princess dolls in the kids section one night.
Yeah, that would get you thinking.
Well, that's definitely a guy who also has a pink tutu in the extra, extra large size in his closet.
Maybe. You know, as a writer, I want to know what the story was there.
He had to make room in the closet.
Do you ever people watch?
I do. It's wonderful to people watch in the UP.
I don't.
He really doesn't. He never pays attention to anyone around him.
What makes the UP so interesting, then, for people watching?
Well, the amazing thing about the UP is that you overhear incredible conversations. Like, we've sat in, like, mom-and-pop diners and heard people discuss the latest novel that they read, or also how they had accidentally given their wives too many of their prescription in the morning and they weren't sure whether they made it through the day. You know, so it's kind of fun and exciting. You never know what you're going to hear.
It also sounds very depressing if that's the case.
You know, 50 Shades of Grey is coming out of one booth, and Gee, I Think I Accidentally Killed My Wife is coming out of the other side. So you never know what you might hear up here.
Is that indicative of the UP? Because I don't know much about the Upper Peninsula. What are its distinguishing features?
The first is the Great Saltless Sea. It's called Lake Superior, but it's actually a sea that is the boundary of the northern part of the UP. And it has a surf. It forces its own weather upon us. And, you know, winter goes on for usually, what?
Six months.
6 months of the year, sometimes longer. Last year, longer. So the people who are attracted to this place, who decide to live here, are a little bit off of center. They're people who don't necessarily have to have a lot of social contact much of the year, because they probably won't. They'll probably be snowbound. And they're people who can create their own entertainment. So when they are out in public, they go into various ranges of behavior because they haven't been with other people for long periods of time. So you see very extrovert behavior and also very unusual behavior as well.
Sounds like a combination of the TV shows Portlandia and Northern Exposure.
Yes, and a little bit of Fargo.
So, okay, a lot of isolation and everything. So it takes a special kind of person to really live up there, as you were saying. Like, hardiness or just mentality?
I think a combination of both. A combination of a willingness to take whatever weather extremes you might have, and so you have to be willing physically to deal with that. Like, we shovel our driveway ourselves by hand. We don't use a snowblower because there's really no point. You might as well just shovel it by hand. And it's also that mental toughness to say, yeah, you know, I can deal with, come on at me, Lake Superior, I can deal with whatever you're going to throw at me this week. We get the kind of weather that you see the, you know, newspaper reporters and reporters from the weather.com standing in front of, and all the winds blowing, and we get that on a regular basis, but we never see any reporters coming up here.
We've had winds. We've had since we've been here, we've had winds over 80 miles per hour.
Yeah.
Yeesh. That's hurricane strength.
Yeah. Yes. Pretty much.
And then we joke and we say we don't see the weather guy down on the beach talking about the high waves. I would like to say, though, that there are a lot of activities up here. People are really outdoorsy. There's any kind of sport. There are trails, bicycle trails, hundreds of miles of bicycle trails, ski trails, cross country, downhill, snowmobiles. It's a big sporting place. Fishermen, motorboats in the summer, sailboats, a lot of biking.
And soon there'll be the outhouse races in Trenary.
The yeah. What?
And next month there's the 500-mile dog sled races are next right. Next month.
What? let's go back to the outhouse races first. Look at the dog sledding now. But outhouse races, explain.
Okay, so this little town near us, they invite people to come with their built outhouses on whatever device is going to move them down the street. And it varies. Some people have them on sleds. Some people have them on other devices. And they race in the outhouse down the street. You got to make fun in the wintertime. So
I was going to ask, is this a winter thing or a spring or summer? But
always in the winter, always in the dead of winter. You got to run your outhouse down the road.
Now, can you combine that with the dog sledding?
Well, maybe, but these are two separate activities.
I would like to see a combo, though. You know, a special race. It has to be dog sled outhouses.
Well, luckily, along the dog sled route, there's many outhouses, which is probably good because those drivers need to take a break.
Now, you mentioned you said 500-mile dog race?
Yeah, they've got all different lengths. Usually up here when there's a sporting event, say, for example, a marathon, then they'll have a 10K and a children's race, too. And they have this big bike race every year, and then they have various smaller ones. But there's a 500-mile dog sled race, but then they'll have a separate one that only goes, I think it's 75 miles, and then they got a smaller one for kids, too. But the large one goes right by our house in the back of our property. It's kind of fun to see.
How is it 500 miles, though? The Upper Peninsula of Michigan's not 500 miles, is it?
It's an out and back.
Okay, so it's like 200 miles one way, then 200 miles the other way kind of thing.
I don't exactly know where the end is, but we see it leaves on a Friday night. They leave on a Friday night, and they go all night. They camp out once, and they come back. They start coming back around 1 o'clock on Sunday, so that gives you an idea of how long it takes.
Sounds like the Iditarod, but for Michigan.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, very much so. Although this year we don't have that much snow. Last year we were like in the polar vortex for the entire winter. So we had a lot of snow and a lot of cold. This year, not so much. So we don't have quite the snow that we normally do.
Have you ever participated in the dog race?
No, these are professionals. They have well-trained dogs and these guys train all year round. No, we don't even have a dog.
our pets are, we wave at the squirrels as they run by.
You could start training the squirrels. You need a lot of them, but you could do it.
Yeah, well, and then we'll attach it to an outhouse and see how far we get.
Exactly. And, you know, mush, you know.
Yeah, really.
Actually, instead of then you just go, nuts, nuts, yeah, you're nuts.
Exactly. I like squirrel racing. That would be a good use of squirrels.
To me, a squirrel is just a rat, and I get rid of all of them.
Thank you. I'm the same way. I'm from New York. I understand. I hate squirrels.
Yes.
I understand completely. Up here, we have the teeny tiny squirrels because, you know, when your frost line gets like 2 feet down, 3 feet down, you don't have a lot of animals, little critters, and the ones you do are very tiny, or else you have the really big animals like the wolves and the moose and the bear.
I remember reading a few years ago that the Upper Peninsula had a big problem with wolves.
We do. And they started a wolf hunt, and it really didn't reduce the population too much because they have no predator up here. So they pretty much roam wherever. They started out as an introduced population. The DNR actually started a group of wolves, and they've just grown. And some years they do better than others. Last year it was really bad because it was so cold. A lot of that reduced the wolf population, the deer population, and luckily the mosquito population and tick population were hoping.
We've never seen a wolf, though. We've seen wolf tracks on our property, but we've never seen a wolf.
I've never actually seen a wolf in the wild, but the first time I ever heard one, no movie on the planet has ever captured a wolf's howl correctly.
Yeah,
that may be. Since I have yet to experience, I'll look forward to that.
It does send a corkscrew up your spine.
We have a fox on the property, and when they're in heat, the sound of a fox in heat is like, I thought it was a woman screaming in torture. I really did. I was like ready to race out into the back property thinking I was going to find some poor woman in chains. But no, it was a fox that was just looking for a companionship late at night.
Now I know what I'm Googling after the show.
So
actually, I shouldn't. I know the internet well enough. If I put fox in heat, I'm going to get a lot of stuff that I don't want to see.
I think that's right.
Should try vixen maybe instead.
I see. That's going to improve it.
I'm going to find a lot of Christmas stuff then suddenly that I don't want to see.
Oh, I didn't think of that. That's right. Donner and Blitzen. Oh. Talking to Vixen's call. Yes.
How do you think he got his red nose, you know? Now, are you two are pretty outdoorsy then?
Yes, we are.
We are. We snowshoe, we cross country ski.
Kayak, bike, ride bikes.
But I have a tricycle. I have an adult tricycle instead of a bike.
But don't think of it like a regular tricycle. The wheels are at a slant. It's a racing tricycle, and she's quite the beast in it.
Why did you end up with that one?
Because I blew out my lower two discs lifting trees. I was transplanting trees on the property, and I blew out two discs, so I can't ride a regular bike anymore.
Oh, the position, yeah, of sitting.
Yeah, so I need the back support. So my husband found this trike, and it's just like so sweet. I feel like, you know, speed racer going down the trails.
Do you two ever compete head to head on those trails?
No, he blows me away. He's so fast. He has an elliptical.
It's like an elliptical machine, except it's outdoors, and it's a stand up bike like. But you use, instead of pedals, you have elliptical movement.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was developed by a guy that used, like me, who used to be a marathon runner and hurt his leg. I had a skiing accident and couldn't run anymore. And so it's really good workout. But I can go a lot faster on that than Janine can go on her tricycle.
So you stopped competing a while ago.
Yeah, about 15 years ago.
Yeah, I never would try and compete with him. I just go out and have fun. But you know what? To be honest with you, I'm not a competitive person. Really, I shy away from competition. I just like the doing, and I don't really care about like where I end up in that kind of thing.
So you really do embody the idea of it's not where you place, it's how you play the game.
Yeah, or just I don't even care except about, yeah, I guess the playing of the game. I love games. I mean, I'm a big board game fanatic, and I do like video games, but I really never care about what my ranking is in anything or how I do. I just like the playing.
But you are a little bit like me. You like to compete against yourself and do better every day. Well, you come up,
yeah,
you come up and you say you did better today than the day before.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true.
Self-competition, that's healthy. That's healthy.
Yeah, I compete against me, and that's about it.
So you guys do a lot of outdoor activities. Honestly, what is your favorite to do during the winter months and during the and when the weather's more happy in summertime?
We have a lot of activities. For example, we got an 18-hole disc golf course on our property. So
say what?
Yeah. So on,
okay,
on any given day, and almost every day in the spring and summer, we go out and play disc golf. And that's one thing we like to do. We like to take hikes. We like to kayak. I don't know that we like one thing any more than another. We just like to get outdoors, and where we're located and just walking out the door affords us all those opportunities.
Say, well, it's like your house just keeps getting more and more attractive as time goes on.
we like to dribble it out. You know, we don't want to reel you in right away. We want to just dangle that hook out there, and then we'll grab you and pull you in.
It's like the only thing that you haven't mentioned that would be make like this place heaven on earth would be some kind of jacuzzi.
No, we don't have a jacuzzi.
Darn. No, we had
a hot tub at the last property.
But
it kind of fell apart and died.
Yeah, so we don't have a hot tub up here.
No. There's nothing like a hot tub in the middle of winter.
That's right. But we haven't gone that far yet. We view this as, whether you take it positively or negatively, as our last resting place. So, you know, we're trying to make it so that we can survive in the winter without a lot of costs and stuff like that when I finally retire.
Now you got to get involved in the outhouse races, though.
No.
Oh, no.
Because that involves pushing something heavy.
Yeah.
Get the squirrels, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
I think we'd have to enlist a wolf or a bear, maybe, in that one. Maybe a moose. We should get a moose to drive an outhouse.
You can go do that. I'll watch.
He doesn't like mooses or mooses. He had a close encounter with one once.
Are we talking a close encounter with a vehicle or just up close?
No.
I had a moose charge me once.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's scary. When you're looking down at those huge horns as they're coming at you, it stops your heart a bit.
I can expect. Those things are, what, 600-700 pounds of fury?
I have no idea. I just remember the experience, and it was terrifying.
He decided to place his body in between me and the moose because we were walking on a trail in the Rocky Mountains, and we came upon a moose who was eating from a bush.
Seemed very docile.
And he just automatically put his body in front of mine. And the moose just decided, nope, it didn't like that. So
it charged.
It charged.
And what happened? I mean, how did you escape?
I didn't. I didn't move, and it stopped. It was kind of like a cartoon. It slid on the ground with all four of its, whatever you call it, hoofs, and then stood up and walked away.
Hmm.
Yeah, I know. I could have been smashed.
Yeah, I know the damage that a moose can do to a car. Yeah,
really?
if it's just standing there in the middle of a road and you hit it going even 20 miles an hour, it was an episode of Mythbusters where they did this. Yeah, they're nothing to fuck with.
Yeah, I was lucky, but I really felt like I needed to protect Janine. That's the old Lancelot's jumping to the fore.
Do you have, in the part of Florida where you live, do you have alligators?
All over the place.
Oh, my gosh, Scott.
I never see
them. That would terrify me.
I live in the suburbs. I've never seen an alligator up close in the wild. Well, no, I have down in the wild here, but not in probably 5 years.
Wow.
They're not as common as you think, but they are not to be... Alligators are weird for me. Like, every time I've seen them since I was a kid, you look in their eyes, and they're looking back at you as if... I've been here 150 million years, and I haven't changed. Back off, ape boy.
A slightly bored look at you to say, do I even want to bother considering you as an appetizer? Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen alligators in the wild, but Not where I am. It's not like they wander into our yard or something.
What about snakes?
Same deal. I know they're around, I just haven't seen them. And maybe it's just where I'm living, I don't know, but they're all over the place down here. And the bugs are the worst, though. Well, you understand. You're in the Upper Peninsula, so you mentioned ticks and mosquitoes. You probably also have the black fly.
The area does, but we've only had it on our property once.
Because we live directly across from Lake Superior, so luckily, most of the time, the wind is coming from the north or west, and it's blowing all those bugs back into the people who live behind us.
Also, we've learned that a lot of the black flies are blown up from Wisconsin. And if you look just where our property happens to be in relation to Wisconsin, we can go 7 miles west of us on any given day in the summer and have bad black flies, and we don't have them. In fact, last year, some friends of ours said they had had black fly problems for months, and we didn't have any at all.
I try telling my students about that when I teach Ernest Hemingway's Camping Out. I'm like, do you know what the black fly is? And they're like, no. And I'm like, okay, imagine a dot, but it gets into every crevice in your face. We're talking your tear ducts, the infolds of your ear, your nostrils, everywhere. And they do not leave.
No, and there are thousands of them. And you can, the one time we had them, I was mowing the lawn in full long sleeve pants and shirts. They tend to go down on your legs. And as I was walking, I was swatting with work gloves and killing maybe 40 at a time. And then there'd be 40 more to replace them.
It really does look like a Looney Tunes cartoon when you see a swarm of them. They really are like this giant cloud that's chasing after somebody. We've seen people, poor people, going to like a park. They go out and the black flies hit them and they race back to their car and this giant cloud is chasing after them. And it really is like that. We also have stable flies, which work the same way, only smaller and biteier.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, similar to horsefly, but not as big.
Yeah.
But I think our biggest insect problem for us, particularly where we are located, are ticks.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have the love bugs down here, which are these bugs that born in stagnant water. Twice a year they swarm, and they're called love bugs because they fly through the air copulating.
No way. How big are they?
I want to say they're like the size of a small bee.
Oh, wow.
But the problem with them is they swarm so much, and their blood is acidic. It eats the paint on your cars.
Oh, my God.
So they hit, you know, and just cover your car. You take a 10-minute drive out of town twice a year, and they will just cover your car. You've got to get it washed within a couple of days because they'll start eating the paint. One tactic I've heard, and anecdotally I've tried it and it works, is to use dry dryer sheets on them.
Oh, you're kidding.
And that helps scrape it off.
That's fascinating. I've never heard of
it. Yeah, I hate the fuck flies.
We have dragonflies do that up here.
Yes.
We have, like, when they are in the right point in their cycle, a whole bunch of them will hatch from the beach, and so you'll see thousands of them.
And
just
they,
like,
they're right on the shore in front of us. We're right on the shore of Lake Superior because in the summer the south wind blows the bugs to the lake and then they stop, and the dragonflies like to eat the bugs. So we will have thousands of dragonflies in front of our house eating the bugs that are being blown towards the lake,
which is one reason why we don't have like as big a problem with flies and mosquitoes and things like that. We have the dragonflies and the damselflies, and they also will mate in the air, and that's amazing because it's like this circle of wings. It's really attractive. It's beautiful, actually.
Now, are both of you native Michiganers?
He is. I am not.
Well, I grew up in Michigan, but I was born in New York City.
So how did you come, both of you, to be living on Lake Superior?
This used to be one of our vacation spots. We would travel up here almost every year on vacation. We like it up here. And when the housing market went way down, we thought, well, maybe we want to retire up here. So we bought a smaller place up here. And then we were commuting back and forth, which was a 7-mile commute one way.
7 hour.
7 hour, excuse me. And we found we were spending more time up here, so we just sold our house. Now that we're live up here, we can say we sold our house downstate to the see, they live below the bridge, so we call all the people in the mitten, we call them trolls, and because they live below the bridge. We've been living up here ever since, and we like it because we've got 20 acres in the back. I mean, if we want to, like today, if we want a snowshoe, we just put on our snowshoes in the back. We don't have to drive anywhere. We want a cross-country ski, just go out the back. We want a kayak, we just take our kayak across the street and go put it right in the lake. Bike riding, we ride right from our garage. We've got all kinds of bike trails right here. We love it up here.
It sounds like paradise in some ways.
Everybody that's visited us, once they come to, I mean, it's hard to get here, but everybody that's visited us has liked it.
That's the thing, Scott, is that you have to work to get here. So, like, there's no easy way to get to the UP. You go to Chicago or Detroit and drive for hours or fly into one of our teeny tiny airports up here and take your life in your hands.
I did have a question that you did answer partially there. It's like, okay, the Upper Peninsula, you're called the Youpers.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
But what do you call downstaters? Is there
call them trolls.
Okay. You know, I was thinking, you know, like, I was trying to think in the car before this interview. I'm like, what do you call them? Mittens? Glovers?
They call themselves trolls. But see, there's a bridge, the Mackinac Bridge, that connects the Lower Peninsula to the Upper Peninsula. So the joke is that since they live below the bridge, they're trolls. Yeah, so that's what we call the people downstate trolls.
What do the downstaters call themselves?
They just call themselves Michiganders or Michiganders, depending on how you want to say it.
And for decades now, the UP has been trying to either get Wisconsin to absorb them or Canada. They would like to...
Or their own state.
Yes, they would like to be separate. Yeah, so they've tried all three.
And no one will have you.
No one that wants us. I think the better chance is going to be to just declare the UP as its own entity. We do have Native American tribe up here that never signed any treaties with the United States, so it's not recognized by the United States government, so its own separate entity. So maybe we can get them to adopt us all.
I don't know. I've never been to, I don't think I've ever been to Michigan in general, upper or lower.
Well, see, now you got a place to stay if you want to make the long trek.
Maybe. I mean, it sounds like paradise for someone like me who grew up in upstate New York and has spent a lot of his summers also on Lake Erie. I'm familiar with that climate. I'm familiar with the fact that you have no sand on your beaches.
Au contraire. Right across the street is 7 miles of sandy beach.
Okay, that beats, you know, because normally it's just rock, at least around Erie where I was.
Yes, you're right. On the other sides of the bay, it's just that we're on a part of the bay where the beach is all sand. But if we go a couple, about 7 miles?
If we go 7 miles west, it's all rock.
It's all black rock.
And lava, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Shale?
Yeah, definitely. But we totally identify with upstate New York and the weather patterns that go across there.
Yeah, so summer in Michigan for me would be like just like being home, basically.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot of people that come here say it's like visiting Maine also. We've had that comment a lot.
And Finland.
I thought Minnesota. No, Minnesota is more Norway than Finland.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what I've heard. I don't know. I'll be visiting Minnesota this summer, or this spring, but it'll only be in the cities.
Are you going to AWP in Minnesota, Minneapolis?
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to be there too.
Excellent. Well, you're not too. You're probably within driving distance of it, I would think.
We are within driving distance. It's 5.5 hours.
And we'll get to see rural Wisconsin in all its glory.
No, we're not taking that route.
Oh, we're not.
No one would go to Wisconsin. They didn't want us. We don't want them.
Sorry, all you dairy farmers.
I Badgers.
Won't be coming by and waving at you.
So, okay. Now I gotta wonder because, you know, modern transportation and everything. Is the shipping industry still big on Lake Superior?
There's a iron mine here, and freighters are coming by. The locks are closed right now, but during the summer we'll see 3 to 5 freighters a day going to the docks, picking up iron ore.
So Marquette's a big iron producer still?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And there's a copper mine that just opened up. Actually, it's a quite a issue of controversy because they're mining and they're discharging their water after their mining process into the Escanaba River, which flows into Lake Superior, the greatest, cleanest water, freshwater source in the world. So there's great concern about the impact of that.
Yeah, you don't want to end up like Lake Erie.
Or even Lake Michigan.
Oh, yes. Lake Michigan, which caught on fire twice.
That's right. And Lake Erie, which in my childhood, you used to be able to walk across parts of it because of the debris.
It became toxic.
Yes.
They've really worked hard over the last 40 years to clean that up. When I was a kid, it was some places were okay, some places weren't. Now it's fairly good.
Well, I spent 2 years living north of Buffalo, New York, in a small town called Clarence, New York.
Not familiar with Clarence, actually.
Well, now it's...
Congratulations, Janine, you have stumped me on a place in New York I don't know.
It's near a toxic waste site, unfortunately.
That does sound like New York.
I may glow in the dark in a few years, who knows, all that accumulation. But my dad worked for the railroad in Buffalo.
Oh, okay. And you just decided not to follow in his footsteps.
I didn't. I was the only child out of his 5 children who did not go into a science or engineering field. I rebelled and went into English. And he said to me, well, you won't be able to make any kind of living on that. Good luck with that.
And now you're a part of a 20-acre estate in Upper Michigan.
There you go.
Yeah, it's all come from the poetry. The royalties are just coming in.
They're rolling in.
Yay, we can buy Kraft macaroni and cheese with this. Well, it's like a good friend of mine once said about poetry, we don't get into this for the money, we get into it for the chicks. And that was a female telling me that.
Absolutely. The women attracted to me, it's just amazing.
I'm not going to lie. Some of my best friends now are people I've met because of writing.
Yes. Well, you know, to me, it's been an interesting experience because I spent decades working as a computer analyst. And I had an undergrad in English, but went back and learned how to program computers. And that's what I did for a living and supported my family for a long time. And now I've gone back to writing. And I have to say I wish that all of my experiences were like yours, because some people have been amazingly kind and generous and sharing in terms of their knowledge and information. And other people have said, well, you're just a dabbler. What do you know? And it's been a tough go. It really has. Because I don't come from a strictly academic background, I haven't always had positive experiences trying to break into poetry.
Why do you think that is?
I think I threaten people because I've been successful at a certain level. I have a chapbook published by Dancing Girl Press, and I've been published in several journals that are very well respected. And
she's had pushcart prize nominations. She was one of the 10 finalists this year for the UP Poet Laureate.
Well, my agent here.
Yeah, when I'm not doing my day job, I'm Janine's PA. So
anyhow, I think that threatens them that I didn't go through the regular channels and get an MFA, and I'm not from the academic circles. I'm having a certain amount of success, and I think that they feel like they need to dismiss me because I'm outside of the traditional pathway. And maybe that makes that pathway in question because it's a very expensive pathway. You know, if I knew young kids today who were trying to make that choice, it would be tough for me to say, you know, lay down that amount of money. I think there are so many valuable things that come from an MFA in terms of what you learn that I have learned the hard way and what I'm still learning and the connections that you make. But it's also so expensive. And maybe I'm a little threatening because I've managed to do it without going through that process. Now, there are things that I wish I knew, and there are things I've learned the hard way that if I had had an MFA, it would go much easier, and I would know certain things and have certain skills that I'm learning very slowly. So I don't discount the MFA. I think it has great value. I just wish it didn't cost so much.
I don't understand why poets and writers and editors and two-degree publishers are so reluctant to go outside of it. Our last episode, we had someone who didn't go traditional MFA as a tree scientist. And I don't understand why the WEPs, writers, editor, publishers, my new term for it, why they're so resistant to this and why hostile.
The term I've heard repeatedly directed towards me and other people like me is that we're dabblers, that we're not really serious about our profession because we don't have an MFA or a PhD. That because of that, there's like certain knowledge that we don't have that they have exclusively. On the flip side, there's like been some amazing editors and who have been very open to me, who could care less whether I have an MFA or not. So
I wonder if they just get blinded sometimes by wanting to somehow be elitist about it. Mm-hmm. And the idea that somehow by letting in dabblers, quote unquote, you're destroying the exclusivity of the thing. I just say, screw it. Good art is where you find it. It doesn't matter where they come from or what they did. It's just good.
Exactly. And I think, isn't it just like when people will pay extra for something because it costs more, just because they think that because it costs more, it must be better?
Yeah. I've actually taught a themed course on literature from beyond the tracks. And everyone we looked at did not come from traditional English backgrounds of, you know, when you're taught in school, all authors are like middle class or aristocratic and they go to get a high education and then they write great poetry. I'm like, screw it. I want to give you Sherman Alexie. I want to give you Nikki Giovanni. I want to give you people who are badasses and not necessarily, you know, may have grown up in abject poverty.
Yes.
And wrote killer stuff.
Yes, exactly. And Alexi is an excellent example of Nikki Giovanni. Oh, my goodness. And how wonderful for your students to hear voices that are like not coming out of the Jeffrey Levine, this is how poetry must be voice, and, you know, other controlled voices that I find in the greater poetry circles. You know, to hear the voices that break out and say, this is what I have to say. Can you hear me? I think that, sadly, there's not enough of those coming out, that there's a great fear coming out of a lot of the MFA programs that we must produce poetry that follows along exactly these lines, speaking this way. And if we break out of this, you know, we're not going to be successful. And they're more concerned about being successful than reaching that reader that's out there. And to me, poetry is innate in every child that grows up in this country. What is the first thing they learn? They learn nursery rhymes. They learn Dr. Seuss. They learn poetry. They love poetry. So inside every person in this country is a desire to connect with that music in our language. And all those readers are waiting out there for you. And to me, one of the greatest things that's happened in my lifetime is that literature is accessible online for everybody to reach and experience. And I think of, oh my goodness, Christy Bowen's work on I Hate You, James Franco, for example.
I've taught that book. I taught it last semester. I wonder, in that realm, though, by making it, normally we don't go into this kind of territory on this program, but I want to stay away from your writing, okay? We can go into the topic of writing, but not your work.
That's fine.
I wonder if the accessibility is part of the issue. And by that I mean print on demand.
Mm-hmm.
And numerous websites and such. Like I say, if you want to find shitty poetry, just find a forum for teenagers online, and you'll read every poem is No One Understands My Soul is a Black Swamp.
Yes.
But a lot of print-on-demand comes out, and in all honesty, it's not that good.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not that good. And now I'm not dumping on print-on-demand by any means. I'm not dumping on vanity publishers even. Just that a lot of what I've seen come out is not that good. Because someone can take their fan fiction or their really, really, really crappy sci-fi novel that needs a lot of editing and work and get it published without going through an editor or being cleaned up and being made even better.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder then if some of the elitism comes from this, well, everybody has access now.
The deluge, the volume of how much is out there. And just, yeah, that there is, even within given journals, like I'll find journals that I like, you know, some really amazing, strong poetry in, and then there's also some not so good poetry in. And I also recognize within every poet that not everything's going to hit, you know, the center of the target.
You're lucky if you get 1 out of 10.
I don't know who said it, but someone said you'll write 4 good poems in your lifetime, 4 really good poems that like absolutely nail it. And I think that's the thing, is that it's so easy now to publish that poem before it's completely honed.
Or before the skills are really there.
Yes. And that's the thing. And the thing I recognize with all these young writers writing out is like, I would never like diss them, because I'm like, yes, bring it on. Just even if it's like total crap. Okay. Even if it's fan fiction at its worst or whatever, write it, because you're going to get to that one good piece and it's going to get out there. The sad thing is, yes, I agree with you that there isn't the fine editing to prevent some of the really awfulness from
it. It feels like self-gratification and instant gratification almost. It's like, yay, I completed this book. I'm going to get it published right now through a print-on-demand No, let's have somebody take a look at it and go, wait a minute, okay, you've got a major plot hole in chapter 3.
Mm-hmm.
We need to clean this up. It's not that you don't. It's not that we're telling you to salt the earth, never write again. But let's fix this up a little bit, make this even better than it could be at this moment.
Right, and I think a lot of that too is that there aren't the places where people are being edited like that as much, because there's too many places where you can just put it up. Yes. It takes time and professional effort and should get compensated for the time and expertise. And that's part of the problem, I feel.
I wonder then if it, in a case of someone who comes from the outside, if then it becomes a case of guilt by association. You didn't go the MFA track, then you probably are writing really shitty stuff.
Oh, I totally know that the people who have called me dabblers view me in the same way that they view the women who come up to them after they've looked at the avocados and the oranges in the produce section and tell them that they have a poem that they've written about their favorite kitty. I know they look at me the same way and they say, this is an old woman writing about her cats and I have no time for her, rather than looking at what the body of my work and what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, guilt. It's stereotyping you immediately as a writer.
Yeah, sadly, yeah. I think, too, there are a number of writers that write like I do who write about not their life experiences, but they write about the darkness that they perceive in the universe and explore that. And I think that that's unexpected and people don't expect that of us. For example, Julie Brooks Barbar would be an example of that. There are a number of other writers like that who touch on things that are totally the opposite of what you would expect. And the amazing thing that I've learned as I've gotten to know about more writers is the toughness of women writers. Oh my goodness, there's some women writers who, like, if you, words were like rapiers, they would, like, fillet many male poets.
I know some women who, if they were shotguns, you'd have a lot of people standing around with their chests hanging like window drapings. It would be that brutal. And I say we need more. I say we need, you know, hell of a lot more people out there, and we need good ones, too. Because I tell my students, when was the last time you went into Barnes & Noble and bought a book of poetry? Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know? And I'm not saying anything that hasn't been said, so let's get back to something interesting. What do you do for your career, Richard?
Oh, to bring in money.
Since the poetry money isn't rolling in as much as
since that's kind of in the red, I'm a tax attorney. But I also write poetry. Janine and I wrote a play this year. We produced it, directed it, and acted in it.
Yes, yes.
Wow. What was the play?
Romancing the Geek. Imagine a musical, all right? And there's acting, and then they break out into song. Well, we decided to do a little different thing. We have acting, and then we broke out into poem. So we would go along, and then we'd have a poem, and then we'd go along and have another poem, and the poem's related, just like a musical, the songs relate to what's going on.
Basically, a musical with no music, just the lyrics.
That's right. I called it a poical at one point. And we had a good time. It was pretty fun.
And the story behind Romancing the Geek was the story of how we met and fell in love. So it was a classic romantic comedy, except that we're both geeks.
Okay, you laid it out. I got to ask, how did you come together?
Well, that's Romancing the Geek. Janine, I was a coach for Odyssey of the Mind. I don't know if you've heard of that.
I'm familiar with it.
Yeah, and her son was on my team. And she was going through a breakup, and she'd pick up her son, and apparently she was flirting with me for months.
Forever, yes.
Yes. See, I don't know, because I wasn't paying any attention. And one night I heard, as we were going along, she said, well, I'm writing poetry again, you know, and I'm thinking Hallmark cards, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, this is the mother of my kid. I got to, you know, I got to be nice to her, that kind of stuff. And then she finally said, I'm reading at this restaurant, such and such a night. And I said, check my calendar. I didn't have to check my calendar, but I needed some time to think about it. And I went there, and her poetry just blew me away.
It wasn't about cats.
No, it just blew me away. And then at that point, I switched from, you know, totally ignoring her to, geez, I'm so nervous I can't even ask her out for a cup of coffee. The poetry is so good. And I just want to say that one thing right here. Janine's speaking voice is nothing near her writing voice. It's like they're in different universes. Because to me, Janine is very boring when she speaks. Yeah, it's true. But her poetry is so good. And I'm the kind of person that I'll pick up anybody, Emerson, doesn't matter who it is, and I'll edit their writing. But these three poems I heard on this opening night, I could not find any place to give her any changes whatsoever.
So I hooked him in with my poetry,
yes.
Scott. So that's how we met. The play is like a black box play, so we used minimum set.
We could fit all our props in the back of a van. Yes. In fact, we've talked about after we retire that we travel around the country and do Romance and the Geek at various households.
Right. Just do it like, I'm picturing Wavy Gravy and the Magic Bus going town to town and setting up shop.
That's right, yeah.
It was very much, and we had a couple costume changes, and we were actually amazed that all of our humor, all of our goofy jokes really went.
Yes, but
over, and we spent
4 years writing it, so it's not exactly, it's not something that just happened. We spent 4 years writing it.
Yeah, and we had standing room only that night.
Yep.
So,
and no one left at intermission, which I think is a very good sign.
Usually it is, yeah.
Although we did promise to take people out to the bar afterwards, and that's always a good thing.
That is a very good incentive. So you guys have been together then what, for how long now?
We've known each other for almost 20 years. We've been married for 12.
Right. So we were we dated and decided until all our kids were grown up between the two of us. Then
we'd have separate households because we didn't really feel it was fair to the kids to merge families.
Okay.
Yeah.
And at the time, it seemed like, oh, God, this is horrible. But looking back, I think it was a very smart decision.
Yeah.
And the kids are all grown and they're out of the house and
they're all doing well. So,
none of them are on the 10 top most wanted felons in the United States.
And not only that, but none of them are on the dole. That's the more important thing.
And none of them are in your basement right now with a bag of Cheetos.
No.
They're all doing pretty well, so that's pretty cool.
Well, that's awesome, then. Did any of them follow in the writing footsteps, or did they all go off into different realms?
We have my oldest son is in television and film.
Well, kind of related.
Kind of related. And Rick's youngest son is in music composition.
Kind of related.
Kind of related. Get him to do the musical score for Romance of the Geek.
Well, he did the musical score for one of Janine's other projects, the 100 Day Project, last year. So.
Right.
Cool.
So, and then the middle two boys are both in the medical field, so they'll take care of us when we get old and decrepit.
Rick, did you follow in your parents' footsteps, or did you go different direction as well?
I had a long and winding road. When I was a kid, I really liked music. I bought 45s and stuff like that. I was a disc jockey in high school, played the dances and stuff. I was a radio a DJ for a while. And then when I graduated from college in math, I became a record store manager. I liked that a lot. And then the record stores, vinyl, that changed the way they did things, and I didn't like it anymore. So I went back to school and became a tax attorney. So
do you still groove on the albums, though?
Oh, I drive Janine nuts.
Yes, he does.
I have one of those 180 gigabyte iPods that, by the way, they stopped making in November, and if I had known about it, I would have bought one, because now they go for $1,000.
I am not giving up mine until it is dead now.
That's right.
Well, I have to find you.
I have two of them because I was worried that one would die on me. So I have two that are exactly the same, and that thing is almost full. So that tells me right there.
Okay, I'm totally geeking out now in some way because I came the same route. I have still my collection of 45s. Most are reprints, but that's okay.
I still have two. In fact, on Throwback Thursday last week, I put up my 45 of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. In Search of Freedom, I Have a Dream speech on Mercury Records.
Bitchin'. That's a nice one, man. I think one of the few valuables I have is a 78 of Hank Williams' Luke the Drifter album.
Oh, that's cool. That's very, very cool. I have all the original vinyl British Beatles LPs in pristine condition in plastic. The covers are in plastic. And you go on eBay and they sell for peanuts.
Do you have the Butcher cover album?
No, I do not.
Ah, there's the Holy Grail.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But I still have a lot of vinyl, but not as much as I used to have.
Nothing wrong with that. I think you and I can commiserate over this and driving our wives nuts. I often tell the story of I'm sitting there one Sunday morning. We're both reading the news at our computers and drinking coffee. And she looks over and she's like, "What are you up to?" And I'm like, "I am learning everything there is to know about the Love Boat theme from the 1970s. Did you know there was a 12-inch dance disco remix they released in 78? And she just takes a sip of her coffee and looks at me and goes, yep, typical Sunday morning with you.
Well, what Janine doesn't like is I'm still up on the current music, and that drives her nuts.
Oh, yes.
I keep up with it to a degree. I know what's going on. I don't listen to a lot of it, but I will not argue. Sometimes there are some songs right now even that are just so damn infectious.
Yes, and I find these groups and artists that I like, and I'll, when we take long trips, I'll play them and drive Janine nuts.
Oh, he actually waited a while before he confessed to me his latest.
Yeah, I like I like the new Taylor Swift album. I have to admit, never liked a Taylor Swift song. Didn't like anything about it. I've listened to her new album, and I like over half of it.
I'm curious to see what's going to happen with her, because I recently started giving her some attention, and I realized I don't think she's as bold and blunt as Tori Amos is.
No, she's not.
But she's very mature in her songwriting and her topic matter. I want to see what's going to happen in 5-10 years with her music.
I do too. And this new album, because I liked it so much, I went back and listened to other stuff, because I listened to it before and I thought, this is junk. So I went back and listened to it again, thinking that my perspective had changed. And no, it's still junk. But I really like this new album. And I've watched some of her interviews. And, she's out there as a feminist. She's really kind of amazing. I'm surprised.
Yeah, I was surprised by her by 1989 as well. And I'm curious, like I said, I want to see what she's going to do in the next 5-10 years. I think she has the potential, I think, to pull off some really, really great albums in the next 10 years.
I think so, too. Or this may be a one-hit wonder. We'll have to see.
He has a gift for recognizing people before they become popular, like before Lady Gaga became popular. He was saying to me, listen to this woman, listen to this woman. I was like, what? And nope, he was right. He had Lady Gaga. He had Kimbra.
Wow.
Adele. He recognized before Adele became popular.
Yeah, I liked Adele's first album. So when the second album came out, it was a really big hit. I was already on her bandwagon.
Okay, if you had to pare down your album collection to one artist, who would it be?
That's not fair.
I know, that's a mean question.
You know what? We were talking about this today because somebody
on Facebook said, here are the 12 albums where every song on the album is good. And so I decided, well, I had to look at that. And I didn't even know. But
I can't even.
I disagreed with some of the choices. For example, Revolver was picked as a Beatles album. Well, and that's a good album. But, geez, Sgt. Pepper's, I think, is a little bit overall, every song better than Revolver. So, but picking one artist, that's really tough.
Well, I was doing a thought experiment a couple days ago with a friend, and I'm like, we got talking about funerals and, you know, what music you would play. And I said,
I've already put together my death CD.
Oh, yes, he's given it to me.
I was going to say.
I haven't given it to you.
No, he's told me that he's given me.
Yeah, it's on my iPod. So I told Janine if I die, it's right there. She doesn't have to do anything. The music's already there.
Well, we have to talk about the Wake album. What album, you know, not an album, has to be 4 hours of music, your favorite songs of all time?
Well, I had a friend do something even less than that. Wanted me to do it on one CD.
I wouldn't do that because I would do a full, just here's 4 hours of the music that he loved. You know, every song is up there.
Yeah, I could do that. It's tough, though. It's really, really tough. Because I like easy. There's some music in every genre that I like. So even rap. I mean, Janine doesn't like rap particularly. I like some rap songs. I like some country western songs. There's songs in every genre that I like, so that would be really tough.
Yeah.
When you come down to one artist.
Yeah, that's tough for me. It's like, what artist do I desperately need in my collection? And the only one, I think the first one that comes to me is Frank Zappa for me.
Oh, yay!
That's not for me, but that's a good choice.
He reshaped everything I know about pop music. In just like 3 albums worth of stuff, it just changed my whole view of what recorded music could be.
Well, there aren't very many people who even know who Frank Zappa is, so I'm impressed.
But then, it's awesome. I did not know about the obsession with music. Then I will have to commiserate with you more in that. I don't want to leave Janine out of the conversation here.
No, I'm loving this. This is great. No, Scott, I think that I'd be curious to hear how many of his Wake songs match up with yours. That would be interesting.
Well, you're not going to hear my Wake CD until I die.
See, he's keeping it secret.
No. It's not a question of keeping it secret. It's a question of being relieving you of that responsibility when I die, that you have to put together a song CD. It's all done.
That's fine.
And I'm going to put together the pictures, too. So there you go.
See, I already know what would be at the funeral for me. That's already decided. You know, there's like three songs. And it has to be... I really would love it if the whole congregation, so to speak, sang along with it. And that's Once in a Lifetime by the Talking Heads.
I don't know that song.
I think that's basically sums everything up. There's a game writers play called The Six-Word Epitaph. What six words, no more, no less, do you want on your urn or tombstone? And It took me about 30 seconds, and I just went, "My God, what have I done?" From the line from the Talking Heads.
Well, I'm going to have to listen to the song. I wrote it down, so I'll have to listen to it.
So, it's... I want bagpipers because of my Scottish heritage. You know.
Ah.
I'm one of those people, I don't get disturbed when I hear bagpipes. I actually go, nice.
I like bagpipers, too. We have a bagpiper up here. We've seen... Scott, one time we were driving back from some ice caves, and we drove past this farm
in the middle of nowhere.
Middle of nowhere, rural route, okay? And out in the snow on the edge of the driveway of this farm is a guy in kilt and full dress.
And we look at each other like, what is this?
Oh my gosh. You know, this is so amazing. Here is this guy just standing there.
Please tell me you've written poems about this.
No, I really should, but you feel free to.
This one's yours. Take it. I can't even do justice.
I'm wondering about, like, who was in the house looking out at this man dressed in this kilt.
And why was he at the end of the driveway?
Yes. And I do not blame him, probably.
Yeah. Do you guys travel a lot? You've been visiting ice caves. Do you travel a lot?
Well, there are a lot of things to do up here, and so we don't travel as much as I think as most people do. And I have a pretty intense job, so that there's a number of times we've scheduled vacations, and then I haven't been able to take them. So after I retire, which I hope to do in 3 years, we hope to travel a little more.
But we just, over the holidays, we like invited all our kids to meet us in Boulder, Colorado for the holidays.
Oh, nice.
So that was a hoot. That was really fun.
Nice. Is there a lot to see in the Upper Peninsula? Because to me, as an outsider, it just seems like a barren wasteland of wilderness.
Oh, no, there's all kinds of things to see. There are kinds of parks. One of the most famous parks is 30 miles away in Munising, Picture Rocks. There's these beautiful rocks that you see from a boat, or you can hike them. It takes 6 hours to hike them, but you can see them from a boat. And they're absolutely gorgeous. A
lot of waterfalls and lighthouses.
Yeah, there's amazing waterfalls here. And there really are. If you come up here, you'd never find yourself sitting around saying, "What am I going to do today?" There's just so much to do.
Yeah.
Cool. I will have to definitely consider coming up there
at some point
in my life.
And stay with us and see that'll make it even better.
And well, maybe not for Janine, as you and I would probably commiserate over our collection.
Yes.
Yes, in addition to a record collection, Richard has probably one of the largest DVD collections.
I do have a lot of DVDs, yeah. Because when my knee gave out and I started, I had to exercise in the house, I would start watching a single movie as I went on my elliptical machine. So I never watched movies much before my knee gave out, and now I've watched thousands and thousands of movies.
Well, we'll have to commiserate on that as well. I'm looking at the clock here. We're almost out of time. And
is there any just question you just have to ask?
Not that I can think of. I always just like to let the conversation be what it is.
Oh, Scott, is always so great to hear your voice.
Oh, it's great to hear from you as well, and to finally kind of quasi-meet you, Rando. Randolph Scott, Rudy,
yeah, there you go.
Rutabaga, Rollo,
Ralph,
whatever.
Actually, I go by Rick most of the time. Yes, well, it's an alias.
There you go. It's nice to finally quasi meet you, Rick, and it's good. It was great to talk to you guys.
So, it was nice talking with you too.
Yeah, you guys take care up there in the Youp for us.
Okay, you'll have to come up.
I will. I will have. I'm looking forward now to seeing you guys in Minnesota.
Okay. All right, sounds good.
See you in April.
Well, before
we'll bring you Youper beer in Minnesota.
Ah, possibly, or you could just bring me wolves. I don't know, or squirrel, or outhouse.
We haven't seen wolves, so we can't bring you wolves.
Ah, dang. So, well, let me ask you before you go, Janine. How can the folks at home who are curious, want to know about your writing, know about your work and everything? How can they get in touch with you online? Where can they find you?
I do have a website, and it's JaninePergrinRastel.wordpress.com. And that usually has wherever I'm going to be reading and some
and,
of
and
my.
And Janine lists. Is spelled different. It's J-A-N-E-E-N. So that's an odd spelling.
Gotcha. Well, definitely we'll post that and everything, and hopefully send some people your way to check out your work because they should. Anyway, it was great talking to you guys. Hey, take care of yourselves.
All right,
you
have a nice
too.
Day.
Thanks, Scott.
The SAFTAcast is a production of the Sundress Academy for the Arts. For episodes and more, visit SAFTAcast.com. Until we talk again, this is your host, Scott C., signing off.